This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 8th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning, now looking chipper, is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, dude?
I'm bug-eyed. I don't know if I'm chipper. But I'm good. Yeah. Looking forward to the show. Enjoyed the first week, the first full week of baseball in Japan. Sort of like throwback baseball, you know, every game's either 1-0 or 2-1 or something. But it's been fun.
You got to concentrate. You got to be on the ball here, be on the game, watch your record button and make sure you're on it at every moment in these games.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. In these podcasts.
All right. On this week's show, we have a chat with Chunichi newcomer Alex Dickerson. We look back at week two of action, quickly discuss the notion of a pitch clock in NPB. And if we have time, we'll handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Shout out to my friend, David K. Lee. We went to college together at Cal State Fullerton, and he's out here visiting Tokyo, and he's a big baseball fan. And he told me about an episode in which Alex Dickerson hit a foul ball that went into the press box and blew up his buddy covering baseball. I don't remember. It might have been the Sacramento Bee or something like that, but a writer with that newspaper. And so it was an Alex Dickerson story. I said, hey, yeah, Alex Dickerson is the guest on our podcast this week. So make sure you listen, dude. So anyway, I traveled out to Tokorozawa and Baluna Dome near the end of the preseason. And I talked to the first year import with the Dragons. And he's the first English native speaker, I guess, with the Dragons in a while. I can't remember all the guys, and I didn't have time to look them up, but I do remember we had Mike Gerber on the show, and we had him on before the start of the 2021 season, but I think he was only up for a little while, had a few games, didn't pan out, and we never really saw him again. Some of the other guys I remember, Drew Naylor, an Australian pitcher, and Dylan G pitched in 2018. But the guy for me I remember the most in past seasons, the native English speaker import player I remember the best is Matt Clark, who's basically a friend of the show. And but they really haven't had luck, the Dragons, with the native English speaking imports, and they've been sticking with a lot of Cubans and Dominicans, and of course Raidel Martinez is number one, and Yariel Rodriguez, the defector. We remember him, he was pretty good. And obviously Dion Viciedo had his moments early on, and Ariel Martinez, who's now with the Fighters, was good, but they're not native English speakers. So it's good to see a guy out there with whom we can talk, and we know he's going to understand everything. And Alex is from Poway, California, Southern California. He had his stints in a few major league organizations. He has 40 home runs and 49 doubles on the major league level, and even had a three-hit day against Shohei Ohtani back in 2021 as a member of the San Francisco Giants. So we talk about that. And Alex was deactivated right after the opener because of back issues, but the team expects him to return fairly soon, and we'll certainly be watching for that. But right now, let's give his March 13th chat a listen.
So we're here with Alex Dickerson of the Chunichi Dragons. Thank you very much for the time.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
And now there's a long line of players who want to come and play in NPB. How did you arrive here with the Dragons?
Yeah, so for me, I basically spent a year kind of grinding. Didn't get signed by an affiliated team last year. Did a WBC for Team Israel, then to Mexico, then an independent league. And yeah, just kind of refound my swing, and eventually caught the eye of one of my former coaches, Aki Asuka, and he kind of scouted and brought me over here.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to Japan. Now, you might be able to, I don't know, drum up a bit of a cult following, because apparently you were 3-for-3 off of Shohei Ohtani in 2021. Tell me about that. I mean,
how? Yeah, it's funny. My swing was actually kind of messed up all that entire year, but that particular game, I was pretty locked in. He got most of his best pitches, and I just put a good swing on him three times. Got three hard hit knocks. So I don't know. I saw him pretty well.
How was it facing him?
It was cool. It's its own event anytime he's on the field. So, my favorite thing to watch is him actually running out a single. He's one of the fastest players in the world. Nobody really notices. He's a special player. And anytime you get to play him, there's a massive crowd. And it's an exciting time.
It's been that way for a while. So, now, how would you describe yourself as a hitter?
I describe myself as a kind of a contact hitter with home run power. I think I'd lean more on doubles than I do homers, but you'll see me when I lay into a ball. I can get it out there with the best of them.
Okay, and what about as a defensive player?
I'm just a guy that I like to say throughout my career, I've made the routine play. Never the fastest guy or anything like that, and a lot of people when I was younger thought I wouldn't be able to play the outfield, but for the most part, I think any team I've been on, they look at me as average defender, and I know where to place myself and know how to catch the ball. I know how to get it in. That's about all I need to do out there.
Hey, man, there's a lot to be said about the routine plays being made. All right, so everything is so new out here. What are some of the adjustments you're making in the spring / still frozen situation we're here in March?
That's just a lot more work. They make sure to take a long batting practice every single day, which they've kind of eliminated in the U.S. at this point. But I like it, and I'm making little tweaks to try to, as an older player, you can't really go out and all of a sudden be putting in the absolute most steps, most reps in your mid-30s. But so I'm making small adjustments here and there to how I do things to try to get it a little more tailored to me. But a lot of work, and it's been fun, though. It's been cool coming out and kind of relearning a new way to play.
Sure, yeah. And this coaching staff, man, is chock full of Hall of Famers, from your manager to the batting coach to the pitching coaches. What are they helping you with in your transition?
Just kind of giving me little cues here and there. It's funny because they look at the game from a view that's probably 20 years old. And as far as the U.S., there's a lot of things that they teach that are not taught anymore, but those were things that were taught earlier in my career that I had success with, and I'm actually finding that it's unlocking some old ways of going about things. I've been seeing the ball pretty well as of late, so it's been cool to kind of get old advice that they just kind of stopped doing in the U.S. They thought they're kind of we're too advanced now, but sometimes simplicity is the answer in this game.
Gotcha. Now, you homered recently at Hiroshima. What was that at bat like for you?
It was good. It was typical grinding at bat. It was two strikes, got a good located cutter in, and I just put a good swing on it. So that, for me, that's a sign of starting to get ready and, be ready to play in season. It's normally when you're having at-bats like that are a little longer and you're making adjustments within the at-bat that you start to realize, I'm getting in-game ready now.
Gotcha. All right, forgive me for talking about last year, and I know you weren't here, but it's the last thing we saw from this team, which is that it really struggled to score runs and just had trouble in every offensive category. Mm-hmm. So what do you see this year that can help change that situation?
I see a lot of guys with a lot of potential to put together good at bats. We play in a place that's not easy because the home run ball is really not in play unless you really lay into it. So that automatically makes it a little more difficult. But we got a lot of guys that can grind out at bats and get the hits. So I think it's just a matter of timely hitting and kind of developing a team approach will be the key to scoring the runs, because we got the players for sure. I have no doubt about that. There's a lot of talent here.
Awesome. All right. So how would an ideal season play out for you?
For me, it'd just be playing in the middle of a lineup on a winning team. It's kind of the goal every single year. You want to have your worth be out there and, kind of be in the middle of a lineup, driving in a lot of runs and hopefully bring in wins, because that also helps your career.
No kidding. Yeah. And it helps. I mean, the team is popular anyway. The manager's really popular, and people are waiting for the team to explode and put some wins together. So, all right, last one. We heard about the, again, you weren't here last year. I don't know. So all I can ask is, are there any dietary restrictions that you've been issued coming in for this season, or have you seen anything, or have, what do you know about the white rice? And is white rice limited? In that?
I haven't heard anything about anything. The food's been really good and had a lot of different options every single day. So, yeah, I haven't had any problems there.
All right. Enjoy the game on the field and everything off the field. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, I guess that's the player's humble explanation of, I'm a replacement level defensive player.
I thought it was good. I thought the whole thing was good. The way he breaks down everything into, it's almost like he was prepping for the interview.
What do you mean?
Well, he was very, you know, when I heard it, I went, he was just like spot on with the answers and very, very, it's like he's talked about it before almost, because he was just very on target. You know, there was none of this sort of like this, oh, I don't know how to explain this. He knew how to explain everything. I hate people like that.
Well, and of course, I'm not demeaning his defensive ability or anything, as he described it best. I think getting to the ball and getting it back in quickly and making the routine plays, those are important things. And Tony Barnett talked about it on JBW in the past, saying the importance of making the seemingly nothing plays are essential, and you know, don't make something out of nothing. So, but anyway, what else really caught your ears?
Oh, geez, a whole bunch. First of all, I thought the questions were really good. And of course, it makes the questions even better when you get somebody who's really good at answering them, talking about breaking it down in different ways, both mentally and physically, which I enjoyed also as good at communicating. So it's the guy I see like being as a future coach.
Yeah, manager,
and
coach.
I think. And he's going to be one of these guys. I'll go to be going to spring training in 2027, and I'll see him coaching for somebody, and he'll talk about how what he learned from his experience in Japan. And I did meet Alex on Saturday on March 30th at Jingu Stadium. I guess it was just a few minutes before he was deactivated because we were going to talk and then he disappeared. He didn't come back. So it was interesting. Of course, you said he's from Southern California, but on his baseball references, it says he's from Monterey. He says, oh, I was born in Monterey because his dad was stationed at Fort Ord there. So he said, actually his family's from San Diego.
Right. Yeah. Poway. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. Another shout out to Akinori Otsuka, the Dragons pitching coach. And that kind of took me by surprise because, you know, I look, not always, but I try to look and see where guys played. And I saw he was in El Paso, but I thought, well, Otsuka was the pitching coach and not the hitting coach. But interesting there.
Yeah, how they struck up a relationship is worth a discussion.
And it is interesting because that's something we're not going to see anymore. now that MLB has decided that's the way to cut out cheating, is to stop those Japanese players from talking to American players in the minor leagues.
Growth.
Exactly. That'll stop teams from taking players out to dinner, Japanese players under contract out to dinner in Japan. You know, so anyway, that was interesting. I thought his very lucid description of his career progress and things that got done here and there, talking about his swing, talking about the way he described his defense and his at bats was crystal clear. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got to write a story about this, off of this interview, and I love his optimism about the Dragons lineup. I'd like to see him hit. I'd like to see Yuki Okabayashi at the top of the lineup and a productive Takaya Ishikawa. And I think that group really can make a difference and have it be an impact lineup. But they're putting things together at the moment. We'll get to the way that the Dragons are playing later on. But obviously, if they get things going offensively, they can be a threat in the Central League. But like I said, I did a story about this, so I don't have that much to say. I put all the good stuff into the story, but I was looking at Alex's swing, and he reminded me of someone, but I couldn't remember who. You know, the swing is, I don't know how much you got to see the swing and how it played in the preseason, but it's somebody on the Dragons coaching staff. You have any idea who his swing resembles?
I don't know. If you say Kazuhiro Wada, maybe.
Yes.
Well, then yes, from the left only side. Because he's the first name that comes to mind on the Dragons coaching staff.
But it's sort of like the Kazuhiro Wada swing in a mirror, you know, because it's from the left side and that finish, you know, when he makes contact. Now, Alex hit his only preseason home run in Hiroshima, but it just kind of reminded me. I'm like, I've seen this swing before, but it's something different about it, and it is Wada. So, you know, I did say they do have the Dragons and a Hall of Fame coaching staff. If these guys can't figure out how to get the most out of the least, so to speak, with the Dragons offense, I don't know if it's possible. You know, I don't know that there's anyone on earth who can do it, because these guys know what they're looking at and know how to get it done, and they know the strategies. I mean, we've always talked about how Tatsunami, especially me, when I see him, when I would see him on TV, or had in the past before he became the Dragons manager, seen him on TV, heard him on the radio doing color commentary, the way he explains the game and the way he thinks the game and thinks through each situation. If these guys can't get the best out of these players, I don't know who can. But I tell you this, the more I see of Yuki Watarai of the DeNA BayStars, the more I am so depressed that the Dragons didn't get him in the draft. And you and I, we exchanged messages this week, and I said, man, you know, the Dragons, they lose games in the preseason, they lose games in the regular season, and they lose in the offseason. There's no time when they're not losing. And I forgot what you said, something about, yeah, well, you know, they did have times where they didn't get the worst straw in the lot, and they were able to draft guys they liked.
And they still came out second best.
And I say that, and I thought for a minute, and I was at work. I don't think I was able to, somebody came up to me and then I never got back to you, but I said, that's the equivalent of striking out swinging versus striking out looking. They just still strike out. So he looks like a keeper so far. I don't want to get too excited, because we've been excited about some guys early on and in preseason or early on in a season as rookies, and then they just kind of fell off. But I like what I saw, and I saw him last night in person, Watanai, and it was all like, and you know, I had my pass, I was in the audience, but it was all I could do to stop myself from running onto the field and giving him a hug.
He's not a very big guy. You might scare him.
I might get tackled. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about the Dragons a little bit now. They're not a terrible offensive group. And like I said, which is a change. But I mean, you know, Alex hasn't played that much, so we don't know what he's going to look like in the lineup and how he might change it. Like I said before, Takaya Ishikawa didn't have a good preseason, and Shuhei Takahashi did at third. So Ishikawa's in the minors, you know, and he has to work his way up. Now, the Dragons did have a farm game the other day. They scored 14 runs and looked like everybody was hitting. I looked at that game, and Ishikawa had some hits in that game. But Yuki Okabayashi also still injured and out. So when he gets back at the top of the lineup, that's going to change that dynamic. But they're putting a little bit together. We saw that they have a rotation that is very capable, but the matchup we saw on Thursday night I thought was really interesting at Nagoya Dome, or what do they call it, Vantolin Dome. It was Tomoyuki Sugano, the quote-unquote former ace of the Yomiuri Giants, throwing in the number six spot in the rotation against Yudai Umetsu, who is coming off of Tommy John surgery and is off injured. But former pitching jewel of the Dragons organization, both of those guys pitching in the very last spot at the bottom of the rotation. I thought, you know, that's an ace level game. And it turned out to be a 2-0 game One bad inning for Umetsu and it cost them, and the Dragons couldn't score, and so they got shut out for the first time, and they're bound to get shut out. And it, of course, Sugano has always beaten up on the Dragons, so that's nothing new. And it was his first outing of the season, and he looked pretty good. So to have him, the Giants having him at the bottom of the rotation like that is gonna, I mean, in a sixth slot where he's gonna face pitchers ostensibly who are not, you know, top of the or front of the rotation guys, I think that sets him up to get some wins early on in the season, and then we'll see how he is physically. But you know, the Dragons have been scoring runs, not certainly not at a clip that's normal. I think I haven't looked at that. It doesn't make sense really to look here early on because they've only played 3 games at the Dome at their home stadium. So when they play, they start out at Jingu, which is homer friendly, and Shonakata hits a home run or a couple home runs, I believe, in that series. That kind of skews the numbers. But they have played, they're going to play this, they're going to try to sweep the Carp without allowing a run in a 3-game series today. I doubt that's going to happen, but we'll see how that goes. Umberto Mejia, I think, is the starter today, so we'll see how he does.
Well, I heard the Carp were trying to get a trade, trying to arrange a trade between the Dragons and the Swallows to get some Swallows relievers in there so Hiroshima could score today.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, Swallows have been able, leads are like water in their hands, right? They just, it's going to dribble out. It's just a matter of what crack.
Yeah, well, it
flows through.
But there's been a lot of crack in the Swallows bullpen.
They're cracking up. But yeah, what have you noticed over the, you know, early on about the Dragons? I know you didn't get to see that much of them, except for that opening series. And we talked before we went on mic about their defense, but I'm actually impressed with this kid, Miki Tanaka, at second base. I like his defense, but I also think he can hit enough to keep him in games.
Right. Well, I had somebody was complaining about him at the top of the order. Is it him at the top of the order, or is it the other? It is.
It's Miyoshi.
Miyoshi, at the top, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hironori Miyoshi at the top, and he's going like these guys at the top of the order. So we'll see. I mean, I haven't been very, I'm not a fan. I mean, as you know, I'm not a big fan of lineup construction, not because it isn't important, but because it's so hard to make a bad lineup. You know, because the difference between, you know, because the difference between the optimal lineup and the absolute worst lineup is not that big. But on the other hand, you can do things that are just patently dumb. You know, even though it's not that big in the, you know, over the course of a season, you can do the dumbest things possible.
Yes, and it can be done. Tatsunami will figure it out.
And exactly, Tatsunami has been an ace at that, in sort of following the, you know, the Japanese doctrine of having essentially a fast middle of the field left-handed hitting defender bat second, regardless of whether he belongs, you know, he can actually produce it or not when the rest of the league is going to guys who can actually do some damage in the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Tatsunami's going, you know, this is how, you know, it's Japanese baseball style. And we've got to, as I say, you know, there's a thing, I guess I'll get to that later, but there's a thing in, I was trying to explain to my friend David Lorelia of Fangraphs. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, David, about sometimes Japanese baseball gets, sometimes the managers play as if they can win the game on style points,
mm-hmm.
by doing, you know, by following doctrine.
Sure.
And Tatsunami's been that, one of those guys who's just sort of like, you know, this is what we do in Japan. This is how you win, is by following doctrine. And no, you win by getting the most runs.
Yeah. Well, your friend who's complaining about the lineup needs to understand that this is not the product that we were promised, right? That Okabayashi is going to be at the top of the lineup, that they only have, actually...
It wasn't my friend. It was somebody I follow on Twitter, I think.
Oh, okay,
but I was looking at it when I was at the ballpark at Jingu. And I'm conflating what people were telling me at the ballpark with what gotcha. Somebody was saying on Twitter. So
gotcha. But yeah, Hironori Miyoshi, he has been adequate right now, and he had a really good spring.
Yeah, he's been chipping away with a bunch of hits. I haven't noticed anything about him on defense, but no, I think that's been good. I mean, it doesn't look great, but I don't expect great from Tatsunami.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I think you have to remember there are guys who are not in the lineup. Ishikawa is not here, but we expect him to be back at some point. So this is not the product that we were promised.
Has been the non-surprise is how good the Dragons' pitching has been. The bullpen, which was I shouldn't say it's been hit and miss, because pretty much most bullpens are hit and miss, to be honest. But the Dragons' bullpen has been sort of ultra hit and miss the last couple of years. But the starting pitching, which is what I expected to be really good, has been really good.
Well, the bullpen hit and miss. I mean, it's
normal, but they've been effective. I mean, they've been relatively effective, and so good for them. And I just love the idea of, you know, this is a team that had their number one, their top draft pick, basically had Tommy John surgery. Yeah. And so they're thinking this is not a good omen for this team, but they've got so many guys coming back. They've got Yu Daiono coming back. It's like, geez, they don't need Yu Daiono. And here he is. And here he is pitching five good innings. It was sort of like a rehab start. He had his season opener, and he had surgery after his season opener last April.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't win that game, although he pitched seven innings. And of course, it was, I think he might have thrown 122 pitches.
They'll leave him out there to die.
And then we didn't see him. And then we didn't see him for a year.
Right.
So, yeah, indeed. So the thing is, you know, he's back, and goodness me, if he's normal, that's a really, really good pitching rotation. So you could go into the Chunichi Dragons a series against the Chunichi Dragons in Nagoya, and there might be six runs scored. it's going to be the whole series, you're saying. But that's not a bad thing. It's just the way it is. So I'm looking forward to that. So see how that plays out.
Hideaki Wakui yesterday won game, I guess, 161 or 160 or something like that.
160th career win.
160 and 400th game and all these things. And he's in his 20th season. And, you know, he gave up. He's the crafty right-hander now. He scattered eight hits and, you know, he didn't walk anybody. He didn't really strike out guys. But
yeah,
he got outs.
Yeah, it was like seven innings of Daisuke Matsuzaka.
No, he throws harder than that, though. He's,
yeah, like, he did.
Amazingly, still throwing fairly hard. So
the thing with Matsuzaka when he was with the Dragons was that he'd give up nine hits in five innings, and every inning there'd be two guys on base who didn't score.
At least, yeah. Those were not bases. Those are placeholders for good hitters.
Yeah, pretty much. You go over there.
Meanwhile, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about some other Central League teams. And I'm looking at the Hanshin Tigers, and I'm like, I don't really care what the record is right now when the MVP can't get a start until game four of the season, the reigning MVP, I should say, of the league in Shoki Murakami. That tells me that you have better pitchers, better players than that guy. But anyway, I digress. I don't want to harp on the wrong guy being the MVP again. Shota Morishita, and I tweeted this out, that swing is just so beautiful. Mm. And his poise at the plate is really, to wait for strikes is really what is impressing me. But this other kid, Ukyo Maegawa, third-year rookie who turns 21 next month, he really looks like a productive piece in that lineup. So combined with the pitching, I still really like the Tigers. I don't care what the record is early on. And again, I said I think they're it's just hard mentally to make that adjustment to go from playing at the top of the mountain to, you know, pushing the boulder back up. What was it, Sisyphus or whatever his name is, the Greek god who was, you know, banned to pushing a boulder up a hill and then having it roll down. It's really hard to start from the bottom every year, and you have to do that, and it's a hard mental adjustment. So from playing games at the absolute top level to going to a regular season in which the games matter, but it's hard to get motivated. I think, you know, they're going to take a little while to get the engine going, but I just, the talent on this team, the pitching number one, and then they're catching the ball a little bit better here early on from what I've seen. Now better for them, because remember a couple, three seasons in a row in the past here in recent seasons, they were just absolutely terrible in making errors and not catching the ball, making outs out of batted balls. But so better is relative for that team, but I still really like what the Tigers have put together. And with these young batters like Morishita and Maegawa, it just really makes the lineup really tough to handle.
Yeah, I think actually their defense was not great last year either. But of course, when they were scoring runs,
it's all relative.
Exactly. When they were scoring runs like crazy and they were making enough, the mistakes came when they had three run leads instead of one. They had a one run lead and it cost them the game. And that was an essential part of the Tigers' success in 2023 was the idea that they didn't have that need to blame things, which is the whole Tigers' mystique, is that, you know, every season goes in search of a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager's job is to identify, the Tigers' manager's job has traditionally been to identify who the media can go after as the scapegoats for this year's failures. And Okada doesn't play that game. And I was surprised on Sunday when he said, because he tends to be ambiguous and his language tends to be vague and ambiguous, but he's very, he plays with the, he sort of laughs off when the reporters say, who can we pick on? And he's like, oh my, you know, just go mind your manners. You know, we're doing this. And Akihiro Yano did it, but without the sort of good nature. He just said, you know, just shut up and go away. Yeah. And Okada is just so good at protecting his players, as Yano was for a few years. But it wore on him. And I don't think anything kind of wears on Okada. He's just such a, you know, this is like a duck in the rain. He's living it up. Yeah. Well, on Sunday, he had a bit of he said something that was reported, but it had an ambiguous meaning, and somebody gave it the sort of a slant in the paper,
mm-hmm.
that he thought was out of context. So on Sunday, after they lost, or they won Sunday, I think it was a Saturday against the Giants, he said, I'm not even going to talk to you bozos because you just lie in the press about what I say. So a friend who writes, is a Tigers beat writer, says, we've all got it recorded. So you go ahead and play that game. We're on to you. But I was surprised because he doesn't usually go after the press. He just sort of like laughs and waves them off and says, okay, you guys go have fun. Anyway, so that was kind of interesting. The Tigers are catching up, and I think they didn't start particularly well last year either. But they'll find their way. And I think they've got, you know, you mentioned Ukyo Maegawa. He was one of the guys. They've got a bunch of guys who can really pop on the farm team, and they were really hitting the ball, just really nice swings and hitting the ball very well in the spring. So I think this team's gonna just continue to pick up steam a little bit as it finds its way. Teruaki Sato's I'm sort of like picking on the Swallows because they're my team and they're disappointing me, but yeah, I mean, they lost four games in a row this week because the bullpen blew leads, And Teruaki Sato did some of that damage this week with a 10th inning homer and, well, a pair of tie-breaking homers in the first two games of their series. So that was that. But the thing this whole first full week of the season has been the pitchers' duels. It's like every game's 1-0 or 2-0. And Saturday, of course, we had the Levon Moinello, Kosei Shoji.
Yeah, we'll do that in the Pacific League.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. But we've had, I made a list of them. Let's see. We had, who was the big, well, of course, we mentioned Tomoyuki Sugano.
Sugano and Umetsu, yeah. That
was and a good Umetsu. One. Then the same day we had, well, that
nice list. Count.
No, it wasn't. Was a list, but it was like the day before that. It was Yu Daiono, and they've been mostly in the Pacific League, to be fair. But Alan Curry had one where
on Friday.
Yep, on Friday, Keiji Takahashi had all these great starts, not always by winners. And then, of course, last weekend we had that. Perfect example was Levon Moinello in the Pacific League against Anderson Espinoza, when, you know, it was one of those games that actually fit them. The one where the announcers say the one pitch he missed cost him.
Yeah, the Oryx pitcher Espinoza.
Because he did. Yeah, somebody hit a 2-run home run off the worst pitch he threw all day.
Yeah, well,
the worst pitch he threw in the strike zone all day. Let's say that.
Yeah. I like the Kuri and Yanagi game was really good. I think Katsuki Azuma and
Shosei Togo
had a good game.
Togo loses, he strikes Friday. Out eight, you know, that's
yeah. He might have been left out there a little bit long, but anyway.
But we had a bunch of those, and so that seems 2-1.
That was a 2-1 game. Yeah.
Indeed. It seems that it's gonna be a season where, as I said, with the Dragons, it's going to be the one we're going back to. I think NPB is going to a deader ball, and they don't talk about it much, except on Twitter. And I really need to research it, but I think the ball is dead as can be now.
Hmm.
The reason it became an issue in 2013 was because they changed, NPB went to a unified ball, standard ball. They stopped allowing all different kinds of makers to use their balls, to teams to choose from among three different manufacturers was the norm since the end of the war. And Yuzo Kato, the former commissioner, said, no, we're going to have one ball. And it was a huge impact, but nobody liked the ball he chose. And nobody liked Kato for a variety of other reasons. He tried to institute a kind of thing about fairness. And the owners were going, fair? Who cares about fair? You know, we want to do what we want when we want.
Yeah.
And so basically they then changed the ball without his knowledge. They went behind his back to change the ball and then blamed it on him so they could kick him out of the commissioner's seat.
Yeah.
Okay, but now they're doing like MLB is doing, which is using balls willy-nilly, you know, changing it at random, almost. It's probably not at random, but I don't know what the pattern is.
Mm-hmm.
Using deader and deader balls, and it's not an issue because they're not out to kill the commissioner like they were 11 years ago. So we're gonna see. I think this is going to be a thing until maybe middle of the season. They'll say, wait, we're having, you know, this is going to be the MLBification of Japanese baseball games, where they'll go, oh wait, we're not having, the ball's not lively enough, so they'll change it in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And suddenly, and all of a sudden we'll have, you know, three home runs a game.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're going.
Three home runs a game. I was at the, like I said, Giants Bay Stars game last night, and there were maybe three or four balls I thought were hit on the nose that kind of didn't actually go as far as I expected them to go. So I'll keep an eye on it. Even the Alex Dickerson home run that I saw on TV, when he came off the bat, I thought, oh, he blasted that thing. That's a home run. I thought it was a no doubter, and it ended up just clearing the fence out there in Hiroshima at Mazda Stadium. So I'll keep an eye on that. But I do want to get back to what we're talking about.
And
thank you for that, because I had seen some talk about it. I did hear in the Pro Yaku News preseason special, they did talk about the fact that the ball had been altered to be a little bit deader, but a little bit can be a lot and a lot can be a little. It just depends. We got to see how it plays out. But some guys, I don't think it's going to make a difference. And, because they're big and strong. But we'll see. We'll see. I think the ball Ariel Martinez hit for a walk-off sacrifice fly, and I want to say that was Friday with the Fighters, that ball I thought was a home run. And it didn't go out, and we've seen the ball kind of on TV. We've seen the ball kind of fly there, so we'll have to see. We'll just have to see. I'll just keep watching very carefully. I did just want to say that the Bay Stars being in first place at 6-2 at the moment, 4 games over .500 early on. That's a beautiful picture, and hopefully Michael Westbay is happy. I did take a picture of the standings and sent it to him yesterday, and I said I hope it stays this way. This would be really fun, and. We'll see how it goes. Let's go to the Pacific League. We have, unfortunately, can't do our Rockin' with Roki segment today because Roki Sasaki throws today. So I don't even know if we got to get him off of Sundays. It's going to be terrible unless I want to stay up all through the night so we can do Rockin' with Roki segments. But we'll have to see about that. But we got to get him off of Sunday. This will be awful if he stays on Sunday. Bad for me personally. We don't want that. The debut of Seibu lefty Natsuki Takeuchi. Fantastic. Mm. And in the preseason special for the Pacific League, our buddy Claudio Rodriguez said it best. This pitching staff, this rotation for the Seibu Lions is pennant winning caliber. Chihiro Sumida, he threw well yesterday. And then I won't want to call him the White Lion because that's one of my bands from the 80s. But Tatsuya Imai has really developed into the ace, and we haven't even seen Kona Takahashi.
No, he's still he's rehabbing on the farm right now.
And we haven't seen him yet. So that just tells me it could get better.
And then they get a big start. Another one of these pitched really well, but lost, Bo Takahashi. Nice
yes.
game.
Yeah. As becoming a starter instead of a reliever. Yeah. He pitched really well. The Lions have as good a chance of anyone to slow the Hawks. I think the Hawks we've seen now, they are for real. That lineup is so hard to deal with. The Buffaloes, I'm not sure what we're looking at. So we have to wait on that. But I think things are going to sift out very quickly in the Pacific League, it tells me. And unfortunately, I had the Lions down. I'm not convinced about their offense, but if they're going to pitch like this, they're going to be dragon-like in terms of keeping teams off of the scoreboard and giving themselves a chance to win every night. And, you know, that's when a couple mistakes or a couple hits here and there can really push them over the top each night.
Yeah, the Hawks have been, picked up. Well, I guess they've had, they've had the offense. They had they had an amazingly good offense for a team that was basically a two-player offense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was two players offense. You know, they had the two best hitters in the Pacific League atop in front of seven other guys who were basically league average. And they've scored 31 runs through their first 8 games, which is more than the two teams who've scored the least runs have scored combined.
Okay. Thank you very little.
Yeah, they'll get to you, and they've had the pitching too. And and then they had the scary thing, which is when something like was it Friday when Shuta Ishikawa had command and run support, and that's always scary.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been that way. We've had the other thing, I guess, Cody Ponce, just lots of, like, again, Cody Ponce against the Fighters. and Sachi Yamazaki, two pitchers doing really well. Sachi Yamazaki losing his fighter's debut, but not pitching badly.
No, yeah.
This seems to be the theme. And so we'll see. We'll see how this one goes, but it's been fun. Yesterday, I guess I enjoyed that game up in Sendai for a couple of reasons. First, we had six hitless innings from Levon Moinello and from Kosei Shoji, and the game sort of became fun in the seventh inning after Shoji gave up a run. And the thing that was fun about it was that this Hawks rookie, who is Yuto Kawamura, who was a development guy, went to Sendai University.
Okay. This,
he gets his first major league game, his first start in Sendai, drives in two runs, is instrumental in the win, and then we had the Hiroshima connection throwdown between Hiroshima native Yuki Inagita and former Carp pitcher Nick Turley.
Oh, yeah, which ended in a home run for Inagita. Big surprise.
So lots of, yeah, well, it was kind of a homecoming day of sorts. So anyway, that was fun. And that's been, so the Hawks are kind of scary. I wouldn't say put the DeNA BayStars quite in the scary category yet, but they could be.
Yeah, but it's the Fighters. I think we're seeing, I wouldn't say maturation with the manager, because I don't think he's doing anything that different, but he's staying on the sidelines. I don't see him.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's what I said. I think the Fighters found that was the, as I said, in the preseason special, the PL preview special, the Fighters, the biggest addition to the Fighters this year was a mute button for Shinjo.
Yes, he did.
Because he's just been quiet. He was quiet in the springtime. There was none of this, we're going to win a pennant by having a big boss tower in our training camp.
Yeah. And it's good. It's I like quiet Shinjo, and the team is looking good, and Monami's throwing guys out, seems like once a week, right? We get some guys.
Oh, well,
I'm going to test him.
So far, once a week. He's leading NPB with two assists.
Yeah.
So he's on track to beat out Sheldon Noisy this year. We'll see.
Yeah. Stop running on him, dummies.
Yeah, pretty much. Kitayama was outstanding in 6 1/3 innings, and Chusei Manami had a game 4-2 win over Rockton with the Manami driving all four runs Wednesday. So it is fun. Of course, we did get the little Shinjo look on TV yesterday after Takayuki Kato gave up back-to-back home runs on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I think not so much because the first one, which was a really good swing by Seibu's Ryusei Sato. So we got this look by Tsuyoshi Shinjo after back-to-back home runs. First was, you know, you can't really do much with that. It was not a bad pitch, but a beautiful swing by Ryusei Sato to take a pitch the other way. But then Takayuki Kato's answer to that two pitches later was to throw essentially a change-up speed batting practice fastball right down the pipe to see how far Junichiro Kishi could hit it. And man, he hit it a mile. He hit it over that escalator high over the left field foul pole, behind the left field foul pole, bounced it off the window of the souvenir shop.
I didn't know there was an escalator there.
There is. There. Yeah. You know, because it says elevator. I don't know why that is.
That pitch was elevated. So, yeah.
It was. Yeah. Well, there was a lot of height on that ball.
All right. Well, we've had some good action in week two, and we look ahead. Obviously, we're going to miss the games show-wise here on Sunday, but look ahead to week three, and hopefully that'll be fun as well. Let's hit one note. I did see a Nikkan Sports article on Wednesday that said the NPB commissioner made it clear there are no plans on the table to introduce the pitch clock in NPB.
Right.
And he was, I guess the article said that he had noted that early on the average game length was 8 minutes shorter than last year, but I mean that was after a week of games, so that's nothing. I tell you what I have been seeing, I'll say since the impact of COVID and especially since the virus restrictions were lifted, games have just been speedy. They're sharply played with very little time wasted. So kudos to MPB in getting crisp games out there. The pitchers, there's just no waste of time except for the pitchers rubbing a wrinkle into the ball and looking like they're desperately trying to try out to be a masseuse. Certain pitchers are 30 seconds between pitches, but a lot of other guys are already below 20 seconds between pitches. I have this 30-second skip button on my remote. And in the past, I was able to, have a pitch thrown and then hit the button and then have a few seconds before the next pitch is thrown. And in recent years, I can't use that button. I've got to go fast forward if I want to skip through the wasted time. And so MPB is doing a great job. But I think at some point we're going to see pitch clock here. It's just a matter of when. And it was so funny because when I was watching a Major League Baseball game the other day and a batter had a 2-2 count on him and he got called out on a pitch clock violation. So I changed the lyrics. I tweeted it out. I said, it's in the Take Me Out to the Ball Game song. I said, for it's 1-2, time's up, you're out at the old ball
game. That's good.
Because that's going to change so much. And I just cannot see NPV doing that as strictly as the major leagues, but we'll see. But game times, when I started this job 2005, game times were at least 3 hours, and I used to tell people it's a 3 hour and 3.5 hour commitment, but now we're getting some games done. And did we have a game the other day done in 2 hours and 18 minutes or something?
One night this week we had, I think it might have been Friday, we had two games done in 2.5 hours.
So take that pitch clock. We don't need you. Not right now.
No, we do, because A, they're using this. They're using a Nerf ball. They're using a Nerf ball in April. So the games are going to be fast because the ball is going to be dying. And there's just more outs. More batted balls are going to be outs than they will be later in the summer. So I think that's part of it, more than the pitch clock. But yeah, as far as the pitch timer goes, and of course, then the other thing was helping speed up games by having Yuki Matsui pitching in MLB.
He's a ball rubber. Oh, is he a ball rubber?
Yeah, he's got to be one with the ball.
So, for goodness, don't throw the ball out. Don't foul it away, because then we got another rub down.
Well, that's legit. That's a big part too of Japanese baseball, is the massage therapy. But I mean, I'm serious.
Is that with the egos, or does that count with the egos as well?
could be. But anyway, They had a discussion about it, and I think NPB is all on board with the pitch timer, because they have, every dugout has this, it has a green poster. It says, let's be play fasters. And all I could think of is the frequent use of a narcotic in MLB in the 60s and 70s, amphetamines known as greenies. Mm-hmm. And so when I see this green poster, it says, let's be play fasters. And I wonder if they're handing out pills or something.
Yikes.
So, but they've been obsessed with having faster games. And then, it was obvious that there would be an interest in a pitch timer. And there was, but then the reality struck that it's not just the pitch timer. The other part of the equation is the pitcher disengagement.
Mm.
It doesn't work if the pitcher can throw to first base as many times as he wants. And what you have to understand, you understand this already, but what a lot of people need to understand is, as I said, Japan is a, there's there's a feeling that baseball should be played a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what that means is baseball in Japan, Japanese people, so it goes, and I think it's a bit racist, to be honest. The idea that came up in the 70s and 80s was that Japanese people are programmed to culturally and genetically programmed to be detail-oriented and quality control, detail-oriented quality control freaks. And that was a big thing.
Yes.
I mean, that was a big thing in literature and writing about Japan as number one in the 1980s. And in baseball, that became what is known as kanryakyu, which is the controlled baseball, mm-hmm. where every action of the game, every motion should be known and repeatable by every player the same way. And part of that thought was that games should be efficient and programmed the best way to win, which meant every team should be able to either prevent the opponent from scoring a single run in an inning,
okay.
or scoring a single run on offense. Everything was a contest over style. The ultimate expression of Japanese baseball was the ability to either prevent or score a single run in an inning. And so we get things like endless numbers of pickoff throws.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. one out sacrifice bunts, like we saw two in Sendai yesterday. Although, to be fair, one of them, the guy was trying to bunt for a base hit before Yuki Inagita hit his two-run home run. But in the ninth inning, it was a one-out sacrifice. It turned out to be actually quite productive. But that's the thing in Japan. You have to show your chops, that you really care about the ability. You know, you got to bring the infield in the first inning in a scoreless game. And you've got to bring the outfield in with one out in the seventh inning.
Your favorite move.
I know. And it's because it's doctrine. You can't criticize it, regardless how often or how often, you know, especially with two outs, when if you give yourself the best chance to get an out, you're going to get out of the inning more than if you play to keep the runner on second from scoring on a single, and you just hit rewind and go into that mode again.
Yeah.
So, but the whole thing is, this is how we Japanese people should be playing the game, and the endless pickoff throws that should be allowable in a one run strategy would be denied if they had a pitch timer. And so I think they went pitch timer, great, let's cut down the length. Hold on, what, two pickoff throws? No, you are kidding. Not in Japan. Never.
Interesting. Yeah, what do you think, since we were off on a tangent, what do you think about the computerized strike zone and that being a thing in to come in NPB?
I think Japan will eventually be on board with that. I don't know if they'll be on board with it. I did notice, as I don't know if I mentioned, that when they brought in TrackMan to 11 NPB main parks in 2019, the strikes got better suddenly because the umpires were told that the TrackMan was originally going to be used to judge them.
Ha-ha.
And then
once, better, and that's, and relative then, too.
Yeah, I haven't been able to talk to my buddy Osamu Ino, who used to be the technical director of NPB's umpires, but my guess is that they actually never did it. They never did that and never called the umpires out on it, because after 2 years of not calling them out, they went back to being, the cold strikes went back to being as bad as they were before.
Don't say bad, say random.
No,
inconsistent.
No, when I say bad, what I mean is I don't mean random. I mean certain teams got
inconsistent.
No, well, inconsistently in the favor of some teams in some counts.
Slanted.
Yes, they went back to being as biased as they were before.
Yeah, it's I mean, I would think this, and I've heard about a challenge system, and I would think it's still so difficult with the notion of a guy changing his swing, changing his stance, and maybe his strike zone being a little bit different. But if they measured all the players and had all their data in there and then put all those things together,
which they do in MLB,
which I don't think it's out of the question to use it when we have some really bad calls, some balls that are off the plate, obviously. But on the close ones, I think the close ones, there's nothing you can do about them. It's just part of the game.
Yeah, I think that is true. I think what will happen is, but, you know, we've seen that. We've seen the strike zones. We've seen strikes changed because it used to be, and I don't know about MLB, but in Japan, it used to be that if the catcher moved, if the catcher's, the umpire typically used to have one hand on the catcher's shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, typically, well, Japanese umpiring has changed dramatically in the time I've been here for a couple of things, essentially adopting an MLB style where the umpire sets up in the slot between the hitter and the catcher, looking at the inside corner, the inside part of the zone, and then putting his hand on the catcher's opposite shoulder to see if he moves. If the catcher moves perceptibly, it's a ball, pretty much. So any pitch that really misses its target, it's going to be a ball, whether it's in the strike zone or not. And they have gone away from that, and they've tended now to call, and I think this had to do with the video cameras and the umpires being monitored to actually looking for the pitch if the catcher moved, because now you get strikes that miss the catcher's, you know, that cause the catcher to dive to the other side of the plate, which is not a bad thing.
If it's over the plate, it's over the plate. It doesn't matter how it's caught.
It is the way it is. But so we have seen that, we have seen that shift. And I think the video replay has also caused, has allowed us to see a completely different way of looking at plays. I mean, close plays, in the Carp Swallows game, I watched a couple of the Carp get a couple of plays overturned when I think it was the Swallows had outs called on the Carp, and they said no. The umpire, you know, made as good a call as he could, but someplace the best position to be on a play at the plate ends up being obstructed. You put yourself in the best, the umpire puts himself in the best place to see what happens, and then the play shifts in an abnormal, in an unexpected direction, and he finds himself not being able to see the tag.
Yeah.
So it's great. I think the umpires, of course, hated the idea of the instant replay, but now they like it because there's just so much less nonsense.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that they used to argue a lot of plays, and I don't like the idea or the notion that you as an umpire would go home wondering whether your call was right or wrong and that you cost the team a game, and now you know.
And whether your kids...
And you can sleep. Yeah.
And as another former umpire said, whether your kids were going to get harassed at school the next day because you blew a call.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we got way off pace here, but it happens.
That's what I
it
do.
Happens. It happens.
That's what I'm good at.
Oh, yeah. So Tony in Busan, we will get to your question next week. Anyone who has a question, wants to talk about a specific topic or has any ideas, send them to us on twitter.com @JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Hit us up via email at YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page, leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes and Google Podcasts and other places. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks, because I'll be there.
Follow the hosts on Twitter @JBW Podcast and @JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.